And welcome to the F9 Podcast with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, where we explore, discuss, and expand upon all aspects of the mindset, behavioural, and psychological aspects of trading and investing. Today, we are turning the attention back on ourselves, where co-host Mark Randall is interviewing me, Stephen Goldstein, about my own career, both as a trader and the journey from being a trader into coaching, and about some of the lessons I've learned on that journey, both as a trader and as a coach, which will be useful for you, our audience. Here are a couple of excerpts from this week's episode. And so slowly I was getting sucked into this, believing I was right, believing I've got the right call, believing the market's going to do this. I always thought I was quite humble as a trader, but my ego was getting attached to my views. I remember one day one of my colleagues coming up to me and saying, "Why don't you get out of this, Steve? You're on the wrong side. It's not happening. You know, just cut it, take a bit of time off and then come back." And no. I was going, "I'm right. I know I'm right. This is going to come back. It's going to turn. You know, I think the market's wrong and I'm right." The moment you start thinking that, it's like, you know, you should just close out every position you've got and walk out of there. I've got to work on that side of my game. How do I improve myself as a risk taker? No one teaches you that. And that is very much a psychological thing, a mental thing. And it's also very personal to you because we're all different types of risk takers. Mm-hmm. We've all got our own experiences behind us that inform us in how we take decisions.
Before we start, we would like to thank our podcast partners, TradeStation Global and the Society of Technical Analysts. TradeStation Global is a multi-asset trading platform with access to international markets. Trade stocks, Forex futures, and micro e-mini futures from one account. Leverage professional-grade tools like Radar Screen, The Matrix, and Easy Language, an intuitive coding language for traders. And with TradeStation Global, there are no hidden price spreads, just transparent, low commissions. To find out more and open an account, visit tradestationinternational.com/alphamind. Or see the link in the episode description. TradeStation International Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority in the UK and acts as an introducing broker to Interactive Brokers UK Limited. The firm does not provide investment advice or trading recommendations. Investment and trading involves risk, including possible loss of principal. At present, the TradeStation Global product is not available to EU residents. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, are another long-established organisation with a great reputation. They are a member-led and not-for-profit body who have been providing world-beating education to the trading and investment community for over 5 decades and serve the needs of their members by providing outstanding online talks and webinars, regular newsletters, education, diplomas, and continued professional development programs. Their home study course has been created by many of the world's leading minds in technical analysis and provides learning of a depth and breadth that is unparalleled in the trading and investing world. Listeners to the Alpha Mind podcast can obtain a 10% discount on the cost of the STA home study course. Visit alpha-mind.net and go to the sponsor section of our page to find out how to obtain this. Now, on with this week's podcast.
Well, welcome to this week's Alpha Mind podcast. Bit of a different skew this week because I'm going to be having a chat with Mr. Stephen Goldstein himself, fellow co-host of the amazing Alpha Mind podcast, because it's, I think, appropriate that I start to chat with Steve about his backstory, you know, backstory from being a trader, the challenges he faced in that sort of trading career, in different types of trading firms across that journey, and how those challenges affected him, and what he was doing in the background to sort of deal with those challenges. And learn how to flourish, because we need to talk about the lessons that he learned. The fact that he's obviously now a coach in the trading space, there was a time when that realization that coaching was important for his journey so he could sort of get the right mindset for trading. And there's some big lessons to be learned from that. So I want to welcome Steve to the show. Back from his holiday in Mallorca. He's on mute. He's so chilled out, he's still on mute.
Thank you, Mark. I'm just not with it yet.
still in Mallorca. Well, there you go. But, thanks for turning up for this. I think we know that audience want to know how to deal with pain. They want to know how to get over challenges. We know that they want to work out how to make alpha in a way that, you know, fits their sort of trading profile. And of course, you've done a lot in that through your career. So I want to sort of take you back to those days in the 90s, yeah, early 90s, late 80s, 90s, times when volatility was bonkers. Of course, it's bonkers now, but I mean, you know, there was other types of volatility around then. How it was for you? I mean, you know, in that type of role, in the trader that you were through that journey, what was the stuff that was a real, real challenge for you? What was sort of getting in the way of you, you know, trading at your very, very best?
Okay, so interesting, because as you said that, I thought, well, when did I start? What was the first day in the trading room? And that was in mid-1986, so a long time ago. And I was given an assistant role on the trading desk of a Japanese bank. And then I was given a book, my first book, in October 1987. So, you know, if we're going to talk about introductions to volatility, October 1987 was one hell of a baptism into trading. And whilst I wasn't trading equities, I was trading the rates markets and the FX markets. They all went a little bit insane around about that event in October.
I remember it well. I remember we had a big fit. The bid and offer spread between T-bonds was one big figure, and the bid and offer spread between Eurodollar futures was 50 basis points.
Myself, my friends, being younger guys in those days, were trading. You know, it was a day of penny stocks, penny shares, and we were all trading penny shares as well for ourselves, and the new issues that were the new public issues that were very popular at that time, and it was mayhem because you just couldn't get anything done in those days. Everything had to be done by phone. You had to phone up your broker to execute. And no phones were being answered, and prices were not. No one knew where the price was, barely, of anything. So it was a strange time. But yeah, that was my baptism to trading. It would have been quite different to a lot of people listening. You know, I wasn't a private retail trader working for myself from home, but I still would have gone through many of the same learning challenges that they faced. And if I'm honest, I didn't really know what I was doing in the early days. And
You weren't taught, were you? You weren't said, you're going to come for a course now, Steve, to learn how to trade.
No, and I don't think that's really changed very much. You know, it's experiential learning. It's you get thrown into it. You have a view of what it is, and it turns out to be quite different. You think you're going to be a millionaire within a very short space of time because you seem to think everyone else is, but of course that's not reality. It was an early learning curve, and I learned from those around me, and they learned. They were learning at the same time. A lot of them, you know, most of us were young guys in those days, and yeah, I think we all found our own niches. You know, I found a niche. Someone gave me my first trading reel. Experience was when my old boss, who used to walk in about 9 o'clock every day and, you know, hang his coat up and then go to the pub for an hour at lunch and then leave at about 4:30 to get back to wherever it was he lived. He just said to me, Steve, we've got these new fangled derivative products. Someone's got to trade them. If you can work out how they're structured and what the price means, and you can do them. And that was kind of where I started. You know, I approached a broker who's still a great mate now. Actually, I was just on a WhatsApp chat with him a minute ago. And, you make friends for life. Your friends that you all start together with become your friends for life. And, we learned what it was, but it wasn't trading in the same sense as I think what most people are doing trading now and what I was doing for most of my career. It was a form of arbitrage, which means, you know, you're buying one product and selling another product that's very similar. You're trying to find value in the relationship between the two, rather than really trading directional or having a strategy as to where the market goes or bonds go or yields go. I did a little bit of that because I was market making as well. I was running a book, and you have that within that. But it was a very different experience in those early days.
Yeah, I think you just want to pick up on something you mentioned there about we. You were talking about it as a sort of a collective. And there was this sense, wasn't there, that you were kind of all in it together. You were sort of almost learning off each other, sharing with each other. And that was really, really important, though, in that part of the journey for you.
Yeah, yeah. I think, you were part of a group. I mean, I've often called working in a bank on a trading desk being like a band of brothers. You know, you on the one hand, you're all quite competitive with each other, but on the other hand, you know, you've all got each other's backs, or you should have each other's backs, or you try to have each other's backs. And the bank desks, the trading desks where I work best, were very much like that. And I hear the same thing in the prop firms, you know, where I coach now. They still have this kind of, you know, people work collectively, collegiately, sharing their views, their opinions, their ideas. You get less of that maybe at the hedge funds, but you do get some of that at hedge funds as well. And this is one of the things which I think is very hard for people working on their own trading for. This is what makes it a lot harder for them, you know, working on home with just behind the computer and not having that interaction with people.
Sharing pain amongst each other is something that's almost sort of
Sharing pain, but also you're bagging ideas around with each other. Absolutely. You're talking openly about them. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And you're getting a feel for things. And you know, it's quite hard, but when you see someone who's struggling, you get a good sense of, you know, you normally know what position they've got in the market, and that gives you a sense of, you know, when you see someone struggling, that really does inform you, because if you know they're long and they're struggling, it's probably going to carry on going down until they've exited, you know, which is you can only really experience that perhaps when you work in a trading room and you see that, and it happens to you as well, and you're not consciously always making that choice. You're unconsciously making those many judgments to inform you of what's going on in the market.
You know, I think you can get yourself into a state where you are sort of almost blind to what's going on. You know, you've got risk, and sometimes you take it for granted. You don't pay enough attention to it, and then it's thus out of control very, very quickly. And I think we know from conversations we've had that there's a frustration of the reality of suddenly the fact you've got something that's pretty major now that's gone against you beyond expectations that you now have to deal with. And of course, you're in such a state when you get to that point that, you know, the chances are you're going to manage yourself out in the worst way possible for the worst outcome and be slightly shell-shocked for the opportunity of the next trade, because you've just, you know, you're asking questions about your own capability when you've done that. And of course, we see that in coaching, this letting go and the addressing the opportunity that sits in front of us is pretty critical in that trading loop. But from the early days, you could see it. You could see when that freeze is in somebody's eyes and it translates through into their behavior, onto how they've managed that trade.
Yeah, yeah. But I think working in a trading room was a big, you know, a big edge for me. And, you know, most people do it for themselves from home. Mm-hmm. I suppose the nearest they get to that these days is having access to other traders or to be able to hear what's going on via a chat service, which I think is a pretty good tool.
Yeah.
In the absence of anything, it's better than nothing. And like I say, I think if you don't have that, I think the buddy system is quite good. I know quite a few people that form kind of informal buddy systems.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they get to know other traders and have a regular rolling conversation. At the same time, it can be, you know, sometimes it can turn quite toxic as well as good trading rooms as well. So right. Those were there. But yeah,
they were that state from the start. I don't know if they turned that way. I think because that's the way they were.
Well, it's trying to navigate that is part of the challenge as well.
It is.
But yeah, I did arbitrage in the early days, and then I slowly morphed to directional trading, both short term and longer term trading. Sometimes just day trading in and out in the market, in the rates products and the bond products, bond futures products, and FX products, and then sort of some more longer term, taking some more longer term risk. So I kind of morphed to being a market maker in that, and then a prop trader in that. So I went through lots of different challenges, lots of different journeys. And I think the purest is when I joined Credit Suisse and I joined their prop desk. Mm-hmm. Not originally, I was originally a market maker.
Sure. But
if I'm honest, I wasn't very good at market making.
No, I can imagine that that was a different type of challenge altogether. But of course, if you start off with arbitrage, it's almost kind of like the easy way. It's kind of like the thinking man's trade, right? You're doing the box arbitrage, you're doing the sort of the simultaneous lock-in of the profit. Then suddenly you're at some stage in your career, you're suddenly a directional prop trader. There must have been a bit of a shock to your system for suddenly going from arbitrage to directional prop.
Well, no, actually, it was a choice. I got bored with it.
The arbitrage disappeared.
Well, first of all, the arbitrage, it didn't disappear. It came in.
Yeah,
that was one thing. Secondly, I realized that it wasn't the risk-free trade that I always thought it was.
Right.
One day, I was making a lot of money doing it. You know, sort of it's really a sort of picking up pennies in front of a steamroller type approach.
It is. And it's always a case of it. You can get in, but sometimes you can't get out.
But that's what happened to me. One day there was a fix, which was particularly painful, and dropped, I think, about $500,000.
Yeah.
When normally, you know, you've got individual trades here that are making $10,000 or $20,000, $30,000 occasionally. And then suddenly you had one which I think had made about 10,000 on the initial trade and then dropped about $500,000 on the on the fix. And you're starting to think, wow, this isn't everything. It's
let's move on. Let's do some prop trading.
Well, I asked for it, actually. If it was a funny situation, the bank
that's fair, cool.
The traders also didn't see me as a risk taker. You know, they said, this is great what you're doing, Steve. You're making us a lot of money. But, you know, we're not sure we want to pay you a big bonus because you're not taking risk, which is really crazy considering it.
Yeah, it's huge, very ironic. Absolutely.
I had huge risk in terms of the basis. But I always wanted to do directional trading. I always felt that was the more exciting challenge. You know, sort of there wasn't much decision making element to what I did. It was either yes or no.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't strategic. It was, you know, it was pretty, I was getting bored with it very quickly. So I actually gave it up. I said to them, listen, why don't I teach everyone else? You know, there's a group of traders on a desk and everyone can do it for themselves in their own currencies. And I'll have a trading book. And that went really well to start with in my first year. You know, that went very well in my first year. It wasn't completely new to me. I'd been trading a little bit of direction for about 4 or 5 years. So it wasn't completely new. And it went really well for the first couple of years. And I got promoted to the prop desk at Credit Suisse, which was a bit of a disaster, really, because they said you can trade whatever you want, Steve. And I was like, really? And they said, yeah, you can do it. I said, well, I can do, because I was doing predominantly rates, some FX, okay, and predominantly rate futures, okay. And suddenly they said, yeah, well, I said, well, I can do options. Yeah, I can do stocks, stock futures. Yeah, stock indices. Yeah, I can do options on them. Yeah. And it carried on oil. Yeah, gold. I didn't know anything about these markets. And in every single one, I just assumed, you know, there was an assumption there. If you can trade one market, you can trade any market. Theoretically, that's the concept. Reality was very different. You know, you get to know a market intimately, and you get to know the products intimately.
Yeah, product personality.
Yeah. And you know, not knowing the markets that I was in and getting caught out suddenly by them and not knowing where to go or what to do or what the narrative behind them was that was driving them, really messed with my head. And yet when I went back to my core markets, which was Bunds, BTPs, you know, US Treasuries, and the, you know, the short interest rate futures, you know, euro dollar, wasn't Euribor in those days, I think it was FIBOR, you know, PIBOR.
Yeah,
was
short sterling, PIBOR, all that.
Short sterling, yeah. That was my market, you know, and I continued to make money doing those. But, you know, it kind of knocked my confidence a bit, you know, when I suffered some setbacks there.
Hmm. And the setbacks were what? Because let's talk about the setbacks then. If you suffered a setback, what did that mean? Was it that, okay, the trade was so wrong you dropped a fortune?
Yeah.
Or was what frame what setback actually meant in that world that you were operating in?
I'll tell you what, because it was quite, you know, it was quite psychological in many respects. I'd had a really good year the year before. I'd made a lot of money, and I'd been feted, you know, I'd been praised, and you start to believe your own publicity a little bit when that happens. And I started to believe a little bit that my calls were right. And when the market started going against me, I kind of stayed with that narrative. I believed that I was right. And whilst I didn't double up, I wasn't seeing what was happening in front of me in the market.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to believe it. I wanted to believe that my view was right. And this wasn't something that happened intraday or intra-week. This happened over the space of a few months. And so slowly I was getting sucked into this. Believing I was right, believing I've got the right call, believing the market's going to do this. I always thought I was quite humble as a trader,
mm-hmm.
But my ego was getting attached to my views. You know, I remember one day one of my colleagues coming up to me and saying, you know, Steve, why don't you get out? This is one of the great advantages of working in the trading room. Why don't you get out of this, Steve? You're on the wrong side. It's not happening. You know, just cut it, take a bit of time off and then come back. And no, I was going, I'm right. I know I'm right. This is going to come back. It's going to turn. You know, I think the market's wrong and I'm right. And when the moment you even get your, the moment you start thinking that, it's like, you know, you should just close out every position you've got and walk out of there and take a little break because you are in a bad place. So it came actually out of my success that I became arrogant.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. My ego was attached to the trades. The worst situation, never have your ego attached to a trade.
How long did that period last? And were you aware of it? I mean, it sounds like you weren't aware of the fact that your ego was suddenly Captain Scarlet, indestructible.
Well, that's the point, is it happens below the radar.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, this was the first 6 months of the next year were dreadful for me.
Yeah.
But it kind of crept up, you know, like a little bit up, a little bit down, suddenly get into a position, get into a view, stay with it, continue it, add some more hedge. And suddenly, you know, 2-3 months into the year, now you're into this position and then you're kind of locking yourself into this view. And you're kind of stuck in it and you're now defending yourself. You're defending your ego more than anything.
What, to yourself?
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's, this is why it can be useful. Being, you know, it can be clear to everyone else around you. You know, like I said before, you can see the people who are on the wrong trade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And when you can see that, you can be pretty sure that gives you a great insight into the market. Okay, and I've got a funny story about that. Maybe I'll just deviate off that just to give an example with that. Not about me, about another trader. This happened a number of years ago. I found myself at a banking offsite in about, I think it was about 2004, and Citibank were holding it in Munich for all their clients in the futures markets, you know, all their rates, FX, futures clients. So I was invited along to this big dinner in a castle in Munich. You can imagine how much money they were making from market making to invite all their clients out. So I was a client of Citibank Futures. And in the evening, I found myself on a table next to the head of FX. And the wine was flowing, the beer was flowing, you know, lips were becoming loose. And this guy turned to me and he said, "Oh, I've had a terrible week." Yeah, but obviously after the introduction, I didn't know him before that night. But, you know, we're talking away and he turns around to me and he said, "Oh, I've had a terrible week." I said, "Why is that?" He said, "I've just had to sack our most successful trader." And I said, "Well, why is that? That doesn't make any sense." He said, "I know, it's crazy, isn't it?" And I go, "Well, what was the story there?" I don't know why it is, you know, people feel they tell me stories. But he said, "Well, this guy, right, was, you know, in those days, Citibank had a huge FX trading business. Their floor was the size of, it was about 2 football pitches, huge office. They had 3 or 4 traders for every single currency. Very different to today's FX market." Mm-hmm. And they said, "We had one guy who was more or less a prop trader. He didn't run a book, but he was constantly scanning the floor looking for people who were caught in pain trades." Mm-hmm. And he said he would take the other side of that pain trade. And he would stay with it until he could see that that person was exiting it. And that was his MO, modus operandi, you know, for trading, taking people's pain trades. And he made so much money doing it, but it was causing so much ill will. And he was kind of all, you know, all the heads of the desks were on his case for about 3 or 4 months. You've got to stop this guy. You know, my guy's getting really upset by it. Some people can't work with this guy. They're going to leave because he's here. I'm going to lose my team. And, you know, he refused. He said, "Look, the guy's got a great strategy. You know, someone's going to make money from it. It might as well be us. Keep it in-house." But, you know, they had some pretty big desk heads in their business. And eventually, you know, he relented and he turned the guy and he said, "I'm sorry, it's causing too much ill will." But that kind of shows you what working with people who are struggling, who are in the pain trades, can tell you. But you can't see it yourself. This is the bizarre thing.
No.
You know, anyone who's listening to this knows they cannot see themselves trade. And if you could, it could be the most powerful thing you could ever have, which is why I love journaling. But even when you write the journal, it's very hard to see what you're writing in the journal with detachment. But I have met a few traders, a small handful, people that I've coached over the years, who I say they almost have this ability to detach and step back and see themselves in real time when they're doing that job.
Yeah, superpower.
It is a superpower. And it's not surprising that they're so successful because they can pull themselves out of these moments.
Yeah, and not just traders. I mean, sports people, performers, A-listers that have just got it right, can their behaviour is very, very different to what you'd call the standard sort of baseline behaviour.
And that's what... That's what being present is. That's precisely. The perfect definition of being present. They're not stuck in the past worrying about what's happened. They're not worrying about the future, what's going to happen in the future. It's what is my situation now and what do I need to do to make it optimal? Mm-hmm. And if you can just see yourself and can snap yourself out of it, that is a superpower.
Yeah.
So... I couldn't see me. If you're going back to that question, you know, I've deviated now, but you go back to what you asked me. No, I couldn't see myself then. It was happening beyond awareness. We'll return to the podcast shortly. The AFMAN podcast is sponsored by TradeStation Global and the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. TradeStation Global is a multi-asset trading platform with access to international markets where you can trade a range of instruments from one account and leverage professional-grade tools like Radar Screen, The Matrix, and Easy Language. And with TradeStation Global, there are no hidden price spreads, just transparent, low commissions. To find out more and to open an account, visit tradestation-international.com/alphamind or go to our website, alpha-mind.net, or see the link in the episode description. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, provide world-beating technical analysis education programs and offer outstanding membership services. Alpha Mind podcast listeners can obtain a 10% discount on the cost of their excellent home study course and home study course with a diploma package. To find out more about this offer, go to our website, alpha-mind.net, or see the link in the episode description. Now, back to the podcast.
And I imagine that you started to impact negatively others. I imagine that home life must have been a bit difficult as well, you know, as a consequence of some of this dealing with.
Yeah, I remember, I mean, you know, we're going back a long time now to the mid-90s. You know, I had a pager. I didn't have a mobile phone.
Right.
You remember pagers?
Yeah.
That's what we had, guys, out there. We didn't have phones with prices on, with charts on, and, you know, real time. We didn't have any
one
computers.
Piece of data at a time.
We didn't have PCs at home. You know, it used to go in the morning and, you know, what's happened overnight? You'd ask someone, or you'd phone the office, you know, just to get the clothes from New York. But I used to, you know, sometimes I could see the price on my pager. That was the whole thing. And as I was seeing the price move up there, I would just throw it across against the wall, hoping it would smash or something sometimes, because it was
at
so
home,
frustrating. Yeah. At home, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my wife has said over the years, you know, since I left trading, she said, Steve, I could tell whether you had a good day or bad day.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just by the way the car pulled into the drive.
Yeah.
You know, and the key went into the door. Although, to be honest, she thought every day was a bad day. I was such a miserable sod. It was, you know, but she said to me, some years where I actually had really good years and I got a bonus at the end of the year. And
well, that's all they wanted, right? Just to make sure you could pay for things.
I'd come home and tell her what the bonus was. She'd go, I thought you had a bad year. No, it was pretty good, actually. Yeah.
So when did things start to stabilize in the sense of, you know, when did you start to find perhaps a way that was a bit more optimal? How did that change come about?
Okay, well, I left Credit Suisse in the late 90s. We had an internal merger and they closed down the prop desk I was on. And I joined Commerce Bank and I went around there. And that was a bit of a mess as a bank. They weren't a particularly good trading house like Credit Suisse were.
Yeah, they had a huge trading floor as well, didn't they?
They had a huge trading floor, yeah, but they weren't. It wasn't particularly a professional operation, not as an investment bank. I think it's a good bank now, but you know, it went. I went through five managers in 4 years, five desk heads. Yeah, I had this new manager joined from Deutsche, and he was great. And he brought in this. He wanted to trial this coach, which he had used at Deutsche. He'd been doing a lot of coaching with the senior managers at Deutsche, and he had a big impact on this manager. And he said, Steve, I've got this guy who's a coach, who executive coach, and I think he'd work really well with the traders. Would you be willing to be the, you know, the pilot, run the pilot for this? And I actually said no at the time. My ego, you know, being a trader, you know, what's wrong with me?
Yeah, I don't need any help.
Yeah. You know, I'm saying, I've been doing this 13 years at this point. You know, I really don't need to. There's a feeling that you're being infantized. Okay. I couldn't have been more wrong, by the way. I mean, it's so stupid, you know, in any other profession, in sport, anything, you'd leap at the chance to have a coach. Hmm. But, you know, I rejected it firsthand. And he twisted my arm. He said, look, you know, I really want to get this guy going. He's really good, I promise you. He'll help, you know, he'll be good for you. I didn't know how it could work for me, if I'm honest. And I didn't really know what it was. You know, in my head, I thought it was a bit of teaching or training, which it definitely wasn't. But I started meeting with his coach, met for about an hour and a half a time once a month in his office in London. And he'd ask me about my work and, you know, all different aspects of my work and my life and, you know, what was challenging for me. And these conversations really gave me a chance to reflect and also to see what I did as well. You know, it was a very clever questioning process from him. And, you know, you do reflect on these conversations that you have, you know, in between and when things come up in market. So I started to learn a lot about myself. And it was interesting because I'd always been interested in learning about myself, but I was reading about it from a third person perspective. You know, trading psychology is this, humans work in this way, we do this because of this. But this was actually about me. This was me talking about my own experiences and talking it out loud and the coach reflecting it back to me, what I was saying and what struck him about what I was saying. And then we would have a conversation about that. And I'd end up thinking about what I was doing. And I remember on one occasion, you know, he'd done some analysis on my personality and said, you know, Steve, you're a very analytical individual. I'm a bit surprised you do the sort of trading you do, you know, because it's very much, you know, you don't come across as a natural risk taker from your personality. And I reflected on that a lot. And I thought, yeah, maybe, you know, I'm not a natural risk taker. In fact, it's quite bizarre that I've been doing this job all these years, I thought. And I've never really developed my risk taking. I've developed my analytical side. You know, I'm very good at finding value. I understand the markets. I understand the way markets work. I understand the drivers of markets. You know, I understand what sentiment is. I understand the fundamentals, the technicals, everything. And that allows me to identify market direction. Particularly, I'd become quite good at it. But I wasn't that good at monetizing it, which was quite bizarre for someone who's been doing this job for 13 years. Yeah. And I'm like, and I went away and I thought about that. And I thought, yeah, he's right. And that was one of many. And then I thought, I've got to work on this. Hmm. I've got to work on that side of my game. How do I improve myself as a risk taker? No one teaches you that. And that is very much a psychological thing, a mental thing. And it's also very personal to you because we're all different types of risk takers. Mm-hmm. We've all got our own experiences behind us that inform us in how we take decisions. And we take decisions based on opportunity versus threat. And understanding how we react to threat and how we react to opportunity and applying that to a trading method or module. So you're clearing it up. That started to happen to me. But there was a lot of other things he brought out on me. Like, you know, he made me aware that I'm concerned about lots of things outside areas I can control. Hmm. Okay? And there's nothing I can do about those. I can only really control what I do. I can only influence, rather, what I do. I can't influence these other areas outside of my control, but I'm putting a lot of energy into worrying about them. You know, and that's becoming a distraction. All my energy needs to be focused on what I do in my job and how I make money. So it kind of introduced me to this idea of this is my purpose and I just need to focus on this and eliminate as much of the noise as possible. Mm-hmm. And concentrate on that, okay? Concentrate on the area I can influence. Don't worry what anyone else thinks about me, what those sales guys over there are doing, about that manager over there, about a conversation you've had with someone, about a market you don't look at. Just focus on your trading. Zoom in. And that became a big thing for me because suddenly I found myself, like a lot of people, in fact, like all people, we worry what other people think about us. Anyone who tells you that they don't worry what other people think about them is probably confused or mistaken. Yes. You know, everyone does that. That's what humans do. That's our human nature. You know, we're concerned what our peers think. We're concerned about our reputation. We're concerned about, you know, looking like an idiot. We go back to our last conversation in the previous podcast with Ben Aldridge. You know, we worry far more than we do about all these things.
Oh, my word. Yeah, absolutely.
And we worry about, you know, things that that might never happen. You know, I was having a conversation with a client just last week who said, you know, he'd been through a lot of adversity in life. And he said to me, he said, I don't worry anymore about what happens if it goes wrong. He said, I used to, but I don't because, you know, he said, what's the worst that can happen? I'm no longer a trader. Mm-hmm. I'll find another way to make money. You know, and I thought that was a great attitude, you know, and it doesn't mean that he's reckless, but it actually means he puts the risks on and puts the ideas to work that he wants to do. So, you know, I was spending too much time worrying about things from the past, the future, outside of my sphere of influence. You know, what people thought about me, whether I was an idiot, what I would look like if this didn't work.
Mm. So this coaching was clearly making you think about your model, and your model to date perhaps have been slightly too self-centered and too dispersed in its energy, you know, across the awareness field rather than being focused on the trade. But what's the realization? Was it like an overnight switch you made and then suddenly all was good, or did it take an awful lot of time to then map through to different type of trading success?
I call my trading career, which was almost 25 years, two phases. There was pre-coaching and post-coaching, you know, and post-coaching was so much more successful in every way.
That coaching phase was what, sort of a 10 weeks or something? Or
it was about 6 months.
6 months. And it was black and white. Yeah, before it was black and afterwards was white, sort of thing.
Yeah, it wasn't quite like that. It was a catalyst for a whole series of improvements that really started to unfold over 2 or 3 years. And just the way I approached my job, the way I traded, the way I, you know, the internal narrative, the internal dialogue changed that I had. You know, it was really unhealthy before the coaching. And this job makes it very unhealthy.
Mm-hmm. You know, it also helped life skills as well. I mean, generally, your attitude to everything must have changed.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there was another incident which wasn't connected to my work, which was quite seismic for my life as well at that point, which was the loss of my sister at that time. It just happened to be the same time, and it was out of the blue, and you know, that shook me to the core. So you know, I had two things. You know, the coaching was already changing, but then when I lost my sister, it's like, wow, whatever happens in this job doesn't really matter.
You've heard that was something that, you know, none of us want to cope with. So timing wise unnatural in terms of the expectation of life, you know.
Yeah, you just look at, you know, and I don't know whether, you know, but yeah, I just looked at life differently after that.
Yeah.
You know, it was so you had those two things going on together. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, and it was, you know, so it may have been coincidental that those two happened together, but you know, I think the coaching was what changed me in terms of my approach to my work. It was much more talking about my work. You know, it's much more direct. I just think the other event, you know, the loss of Joe it's one of those things where you just realize the world's never going to turn the way you want.
Sure.
You know, the world will. The world is never going to bend to your ego, and you know, you've got to make the most of it.
Yeah, no, you absolutely.
Know? Yeah.
So, and of course, this life changing sort of trade and mindset changing sort of period, that inspired you to to look at yourself as a coach, yeah? To go on an investigation that went deeper.
Yeah, but it was another 10 years of trading after that, and it was by far my most successful period of trading. I would say that I'd kind of lost my way a little bit up till then. And it was interesting because, you know, I was had a really good handle on markets, but I wasn't good at monetizing my ideas. And that's what changed after the coaching.
Mm.
You know, it was being more aware of who I was, how I was, my internal dialogue, what I was doing as a trader, what my job involved, what it required me to be like. I formulated some new ideas about trading. I would say my most successful trades came in those years afterwards. And then I got a new job. I moved to the private bank. It was a private bank. It was American Express. And it was their trading arm. They did really well. I say their trading arm. It was to run a swaps book in their trading arm.
Mm-hmm.
And then literally as I walked through the door, they decided they weren't doing swaps anymore. Compliance had had an issue with it. So I said, well, what's my job here? Because my job was to be a swaps trader. And they said, well, you've got some capital, Steve, still use it, just trade it. And, you know, I prop trade it. So it gave me a chance to be a prop trader again. And it went brilliantly. Every single year went brilliantly. But I took this new mindset in that I'd probably been forming for about 3 or 4 years
mm-hmm.
after the coaching. And it was a focusing on what you need to do,
yeah.
not worrying what others think.
Yeah.
It was a different attitude to risk. I adopted a different hats mentality. So one of the things I thought was, okay, so I'm good at analysis. I'm good at finding value. I'm good at coming up with ideas. Okay. So on one hand, I'm going to be the person who does that. But on the other hand, I'm then going to give that idea to the risk taker and the risk manager, which will be me with a different hat on, who has to decide whether to take the trade, decide how they're going to implement it, decide how they're going to, you know, the size, decide the entries and exit levels, decide how they're going to manage the risk, and then execute those trades.
Yeah.
So it was almost like I had two different roles, each with a different hat on. So metaphorically, you know, I would get my red hat off and I put my blue hat on.
Yeah, that's a clever approach. That's a very clever approach. So that type of process is really, really valuable. Which is you stepping out of your one self into another.
Yeah.
With your hat.
I'm laughing because I, you know, in my mind, I have the view that I literally left the office, came back in with a new hat on, and started again. But that wasn't how it was. But it kind of feels like that's how it was. But actually, it was really good because doing that really got me to think about how I took risk.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is this the sort of trade I like? Is this an entry level? I want to be at. Is this? What is the narrative story behind this trade? You know, I knew it because I analysed it, which made it easier. But, you know, I could sit there. No, this isn't ready to go yet. I can see on the one hand why I've come up with the analysis. I know why. But on the other hand, at the moment, I can't see the rationale for the trade because the payoff isn't good enough versus where I'm going to be stopped out if it's wrong. You know, so I really started to think a lot more. And then I started to think about other aspects, like the psychological aspects. So, you know, I came up with a phrase, which I think I've mentioned before, which is learn to love your losses.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here I was prop trading. Effectively, I was starting in a negative, in effect, when you prop trade. No flow, no clients, no customers. And I had to make money. So I had to take risk. There's no choice. You have to be willing to lose money to make money. If you're not willing to lose money, you're not going to make money. And I had a problem losing money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got to that point where, you know, and I think this happened a few years earlier where losses had started to become existential.
Yeah. You know, do you think this has always been a problem, though, with you?
Yeah, to a degree.
Yeah,
I think it was always a problem. It's maybe why I went into arbitrage in the early days. Yeah. You know, and when I was a market maker, it was relatively easy because you get a lot of trades. They hit your side of the bid, and you've got, you know, and maybe I hadn't realized that when I first prop traded, my first effort to be a prop trader, you know, it went well in year one. It might have been that I just caught onto a good trade and I stuck with it, you know, which I pretty did. I pretty much ran a big move all year long and stayed with it, and it was onside, and I never had to worry about being offside. I talk about this a lot. I talk about this with my clients, right? We hate losing. Okay. You've probably seen me tweet about this. I think I only put a tweet yesterday. All humans have a need to be right. It's conditioned into us at a very young age. Okay. In our early education system, you know, your parents, your caregivers, your teachers, your peers, you know, that they praise you if you get things right. You know, you're promoted within the school to the prefect, and you get A stars, and you get, do you know what I mean? You're rewarded for being right early in your life.
Desire for that, yeah.
And that goes all the way through your education. You know, being right brings rewards. And right the way through to university, okay? And that doesn't work in the world of trading. You know, this need to be right, okay, gets in the way, because in trading you need to do the right thing. You need to follow a process. You don't need to be right. But I don't think I'd worked that out in the early days. And I think that was a problem for me. And losing, being wrong, being out the market, always felt existential, like I was an idiot. It was shameful.
Yeah.
You know, you associate shame with being wrong, failing. And as long as that happens, you're going to struggle to make money. Because to make money, you need to lose money. You need to place bets. You need to take risks. You need to be willing to go negative, to go red. You need to be willing to give back, because it's never a straight line, you know? And you don't know which trade is going to be the one that makes you the money. So it's almost like you have to come to terms with that. So when I came up with this idea of learn to love my losses, which is it's daft really as a mantra.
No, but it's a proper mantra.
It got me to suddenly realize that losing is okay. Don't worry about putting this trade on. If it goes wrong, you'll make another one. And in fact, you know, I had a fantastic trader towards the end of my career. I was a long way down into the year. I was big negative, you know, going into 5 months through the year. I was in a big negative position, but it didn't faze me at all, because I trusted myself not only to make the money back, but to get ahead. That's my process. My process is going to be positive and it's going to be negative. Okay. You're going to go through ups and downs. And if you worry about the downs too much and you let them control you, you'll never get the ups.
No, really interesting. I think one of our recent guests, I don't know, it might have been Tom Canfield, where, you know, his best trade was a loss. Where the perspective is was that, you know, I'm so pleased with how I lost money, you know, because the process was just so right. You know, even though it was a loss, it was the fact that, you know, his best ever trade was actually a losing trade. I don't know whether it was Tom or not. It may not have been. But I think that mindset, I mean, we've talked much about it, where, you know, if you can not think of a trade as a winning or losing trade, but just as a process to learn from, you just have a better trading experience from it, because you kind of take away some of the, you know, the negativity of the emotion of not just the pain of a loss, but as you found out in part of your career, that actually the pain of the ego and getting carried away of you guys thinking you're a superhuman. And of course that guess leads to a bad place as well.
Yeah, completely. You know, you have to be humbled sometimes.
Absolutely.
You have to ground yourself sometimes. And that phrase of learning to love your losers, it was for me just a way of grounding myself, of letting go sometimes when things weren't going well, of just saying to myself, you know, sometimes you have to lose. You're facing that, as we spoke with in our last guest, Ben Aldridge. You know, we're facing such extreme uncertainty. How can we know whether we're going to win?
Hmm.
You know, it's, you know, you can come close to it, and yet, you know, you can go along one day of something that looks really bullish, and it just turns, a piece of news comes out, and it drops like a stone.
Hmm.
And you had no, you know, are you at fault for that? No. Can you blame yourself? It's like blaming yourself for calling heads or tails wrong sometimes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but you do. You will go inside and you will blame yourself and you will beat yourself up. And, you know, I'm going to say that again. You will blame yourself. You will berate yourself. You will beat yourself up. And you'll end up getting yourself in a negative mindset.
Mm-hmm.
Something you had no control over that was completely random.
Mm. And of course, that then steers what we know to be the bias of profitability out there in trading land, that, you know, what, 95% of people are losing money on what should be a 50-50 bet. You know, it should be a 50-50 bet that, you know, some people are making money, some people are losing. But it's not. There's this sort of skew towards, well, what's going on a 50-50 bet if 95% are losing money? Well, it's probably because this mindset difference is so wrong. So that you're kind of digging your own hole all the time, and you're fighting against you all of the time.
Yeah. Listen, yeah. I mean, you know, sometimes the curse is just being too close to the screens.
Well, there's that.
You know, I mean, I
involved.
Yeah. I mean, I don't trade for a living anymore, as you know, because I work with you as a coach and we do this podcast, but I still trade on the side in a little spread betting account. I like placing trades here and there. It's just a bit of fun money. And I had one trade in, is it 20? I can't remember. It's 2020, I think. Euro dollar trade, where I made 500 points on it. But the entry, right, and I put a stop in the market, it got down to within 3 points of the stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it was, which was about 50 points below the entry. And that was about... It was about a week after I'd actually put it on. And obviously, I'm not checking the price intraday, every day. You know, I might look at it at the end of the day and that's it. And I hadn't realised, till it was a long way on side, it actually got to within three ticks of being stopped out. Now, I'm thinking, what might I have done in my younger days as a trader then? So I put the trade on. I've got a view looking for it, which was about 500 points higher. A long-term view, and I've got myself, I put a stop 50 points away. So it was a 10-to-1 risk reward. And I'm thinking, had I been at my screen watching it come off, not going anywhere, and watching the market tick by tick, and it's got to within a few ticks of where my stop is, I can guarantee you that in my early days, I'd have gone, oh, this is going to take the stop out.
Cancel the stop, out.
No. let's cut out here. Right, 5 or 10 points before the stop, because it's going to hit the stop. It's cut out now.
Yeah.
Save a few ticks, and I'll be all right. And then I watch it go all the way up, and I'm not long. And I'd be fuming, and I'd end up
chasing it
up, paying up at the top, at which point it then corrects. And I'm not making this up. I've done this many times in my career.
There's 10,000 people listening to this podcast going, "Yep, I know exactly what that feels like."
Yeah. So you're getting drawn in by the market and sucked in.
It owns you.
In fact, I got a trade on at the moment, euro sterling. I only put it on the end of last week. It got to within one tick of the stop loss, and it's now 70 points higher. And it's, you know, I've had the opposite, by the way. I've had a trade on that for weeks I thought was doing really well. Okay, a Scandi cross trade. And actually, I'd been stopped out on it, and I didn't know.
Oh, well.
But that wasn't a true stop. That was one of those dodgy broker stops over a data release, a GDP release.
Yeah. Well, I went short a euro sterling today, actually, as well. So,
oh, I'm long.
We're locked to these tricks.
We're against each other. Because you're going on holiday, though.
So let's march forward. Okay, let's come forward to. You then started to feel, I guess, some sort of need of wanting to help people. Yeah. Well, what was it that made you suddenly think, actually, let's do a master's, let's sort of, you know, let's dig into behavioural finance and Gestalt and all those sort of background sort of drivers? What triggered you into doing that?
I'll be honest, it came out the blue.
Yeah.
Right. So Standard Chartered Bank bought the banking arm of American Express from Amex. Amex decided they didn't
want to do that. Yeah,
they didn't want to be in banking. Mm-hmm. Okay. Standard Chartered didn't have any need or in their London office for prop traders. So
I remember that period. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was just after the global financial crisis. So
this
was 2009. And I thought I'm ready to take what I do now and apply it to a hedge fund role. Mm-hmm. Now, 2009 wasn't the easiest time to find a role in a hedge fund.
Well, it was still bonkers, yeah, absolutely.
It was still coming out of the global financial crisis. And there were literally thousands of bankers, traders on the streets from the big shops. So I went back to my coach, Peter, who I, 10 years earlier, who had worked with me. And you know, I'm just going to throw this in there now. I look back at myself and I wonder why I never had more coaching from him. It was really bizarre. I never decided to employ him as a coach. You know, no golfer would employ a golf coach, then start playing really well and then think, I don't need a coach.
Yeah.
You know, or a tennis player or a boxer or a footballer. You know, you have coaches all the time. But I was aware that that period working with him was transformative to my performance over the next 10 years. And I actually went back to him because I knew he was well connected to hedge funds. He was working with a lot of hedge funds then to see if he could get me an interview, sort of connect me to some of his hedge fund clients. And he did, and he arranged some interviews. And during that chat, and this is quite interesting, by the way, he asked me during our chat, Steve, I don't know what I did for you, which is a coach now I can resonate with now. When I work with people, I know it has a big impact on them, but I don't always know exactly what that is. It's very personal to everyone. And I said to him, well, Peter, you showed me who I was. You know, I saw myself for the first time, my true self, not the self that I wanted to see, but my inner self. And I saw how that was being applied in my work. And that, you know, it was like having a mirror and seeing yourself for the first time. I said, just having that reflection enables you to change things. And until you see yourself and know who you are, truly, it's impossible to change. And change can only happen at that deep level.
Yeah.
So that happened on that conversation. But during the conversation, when I was back with him, Peter said, have you thought about becoming a coach? He said, why don't you, you love the psychology side of this, Steve, you know, and I think there's going to be a need for more coaches in the years ahead. And I couldn't get that out of my mind. You know, it was quite a different thing, you know, working in a hedge fund on the one hand, deciding to start a whole new career, not knowing what the hell I was doing in the other one.
Mm-hmm.
But that's what got my attention. And I decided to stop looking at hedge fund roles, you know, and I had a couple of job offers came to me, which rather bizarrely I turned down and decided this is what I was going to do. And I thought I'd trade for myself in the meantime. That way I can earn some income from trading and, you know, or theoretically, hopefully earn some income. You'll never know. And I'll learn coaching and I'll start. But, you know, develop clients and I'll do courses. And that's what happened over the next few years. And to be honest, I love it. And there's another side to it as well. I think unconsciously, somewhere I decided that I needed to check out from trading now. You know, I think it was, I'm going into my late 40s now. There's going to be a point at some point where I need to check out. It's not always the job.
Not a longevity trade area, is it really?
Yeah, you know, it's a very challenging job. It's a very stressful job. You know, it's a brilliant job and I loved it, but it also makes you feel, can make you feel crap about yourself a lot of the time.
Yeah.
You feel incredibly uncomfortable. And I was wondering, how many more years do I need to put myself through that stress?
Yeah.
So I think there was an unconscious choice there as well to think, well, I could start a new career and I can carry on trading while starting that career for a living, which I stopped trading. I did stop the trading for a living because it was impossible for me to do two jobs at once. I was always a very hands-on trader, very close to the market, not someone who could do it from a distance. And hence, you know, I do it from a distance now, but just small size, not for a living. So I think, I think that's what happened. And I made that choice to become a coach. I did a coaching diploma. I've studied various forms of psychotherapy since then, which I'll bring to my work. I worked under the mentorship of Peter, who was my original coach. He became my mentor for that. And we still do some work together, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, I've got a few different partnerships. And, it's something I love doing. In fact, I think somewhere I always wanted to do this.
Yeah, I know. You just get a sense that, you know, your background purpose was probably sitting in a trading room in 1987 just thinking, well, not quite sure what I'm doing there, but some days are good, some days are bad, and I guess put up with it. And I actually had a very similar sort of sense I think probably had it from day one, really, but certainly in the early 90s, I started to sense that my direction was bigger than markets. There was a more purposeful direction that I had as my sort of within my DNA that eventually, you know, came about when, you know, for our own creation of Alpha Mind it started to bring together a lot of the things that I'd thought about. And obviously that I've got other background things as well that link perhaps into an even deeper thing that's going on. But, you know, I had the opportunity like you to switch and to shift to a more purposeful direction. And there's a lot of people out there that don't have that opportunity and kind of just get stuck in that, you know, turn up, you know, I'm a trader, but, you know, some days are good, some days are bad. There's challenges. I've had three wives and, you know, I've got a couple of background alcoholic things that are going on. You know, these things are out there as normal in that space, and they're hugely challenging. But we had the opportunity of maybe laying our own ground for that purpose to evolve. And of course, we've made that connection a few years ago now. And you do wonder about luck and purpose, that actually you need the right condition of yourself to be able to make that judgment and to be able to think, yeah, I want to follow that direction. And I think we've seen it through several of our clients. So, you know, they start to question that, you know, 17 hours a day in front of a screen trying to scrape a living is not perhaps the most purposeful thing they should be doing, but getting a bit more balance around things, but still having trading there, you know, in a more sort of managed way, you know, has a better outcome. And particularly if you can put something around it where you're fitting some sort of purposeful journey in. And, you know, our journey is very connected to markets. So it kind of is the best of both worlds. You've still got the skin in the game of the joy of markets. And I think there is a joy of the market. Yeah, the kind of work out the complexity of it and getting things right and making the right call. There's a great sense of achievement from that. And I think you get a buzz out of it. But of course, we get a buzz about, you know, winning new clients and having the dialogue to win new clients as this new purpose evolves. And so I think, you know, as any trader develops themselves, balance starts to become really, really important, doesn't it?
Yeah. And you know, we're going back to what you said, as a trader develops themselves. You know, I've given a lot of thought recently to this whole idea of trader development. It's not done very well. And we're not, I don't mean me and you, but humans are not very good generally at developing something that takes many years to learn later in their life. You know, trading is a performance activity. You've heard me mention this, and I'm sure the listeners have heard me mention this regularly. It's got far more in common with sport or music or acting than it has with some sort of with accounting or economics, for example.
Yeah, absolutely. A lifelong endeavor.
Yeah. The performance part of trading is the taking the risk. Mm-hmm. You know, it's equivalent to being out there exposed for the world to see, you know, and that is, you know, it's the stepping on the tightrope, you know, the balance, like you say. And it takes many years to learn to trade. And if you look at most people who are good at performance activity, they started learning it in their early years, you know, quite possibly before they were even 10.
Yeah.
Almost certainly no later than their mid-teens. Okay. And those are the great years to be formative. Now, I always remember reading about Steve Cohen, the legend that is Steve Cohen. And it was in one of the interviews he did, I think, with Jack Schwager, where he said that, you know, I was always surrounded by, you know, I think it was an uncle or a father, maybe his father, who was trading. And I was surrounded by it, and I saw it going on all the time. And it was, you know, I started doing a little bit of myself. And, you know, so in a way, he was already doing it in his early teens.
Yeah.
You know, we had Oliver Kerr on a few podcasts back. He was brilliant, right? His father was a trader.
Yeah.
You know, so he was surrounded by it at a young age. So maybe somewhere that, you know, and he realized the importance of risk management at a very young age because he was surrounded by it. And he said he saw his father, you know, go, you know, I think lose everything in it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And this is a guy who ended up making nearly 1,000% in the US Stock Trading Championship in 2020. And people were so surprised. They've replied to us how much emphasis he puts on risk management because he knows that's the important part. Now, risk management happens in every sport. You play defense. You know, when you box, you keep your hands up in front of your face and you try and, you know, you try and punch whilst keeping your face covered all in one move.
Yeah.
You know, the best form of attack is defense. The best form of defense is attack. That's what trading is. It is a performance activity, you know. And in sport, you learn these in your formative years when you're learning. You don't even ask questions. You just learn to do. When you learn something much later in life, you know, for me, it was in my mid-20s. You can't be bothered to learn. You almost want the answers there and then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you want to be making money on day one, which is ridiculous. You know, how can you make money at something you're not very good at? When roughly the success rate of this is, you know, they say it's 5-10%. I think it's far less,
maybe
by
less.
The way. You know, it takes years to become good at trading. You know, it took me 13 years to become good at it. But I managed to survive in a series of bank trading roles until then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Yeah, people always talk about Jim Simons. You know, he didn't start making money for about 10, 11 years. Then he ended up becoming the most successful trader ever. You know, you have to learn how to fail, how to go wrong. You know, a lot of people, for me, they make the mistake of committing their money early and giving up their job. And, you know, rather than learning trading for many years and then deciding to do it,
decided to commit something to it. I'm going off a tangent now, aren't I?
As usual. No, I think it's important to discuss these stories. You know, I think
bringing things to life with stories
is what it's all about.
How did we get to this? Because I realise we've probably got to wrap this up in a minute. So,
we drift off as usual, just two old blokes giving it a go now, and we end where we end.
Listen, I hope it's interesting because you came up with this idea of interviewing me that you thought would be good for our listeners because a lot of these topics were coming up. I hope, you know, to all the listeners out there that you are getting something from me laying myself bare here with my story. I'm not sure how much I'm laying myself bare, but you know, trading is damn hard, you know, and many days where, you know, you go into yourself, and I had those dark days, you know, where you just lose yourself in yourself and you think the whole world's laughing at you and, you know, you think you're the world's biggest idiot. And you look down into the abyss and you think, you know, this is all going to go wrong. There's no reason why it should go wrong, by the way, but this natural human behavior aspect where we think it's going to go wrong. And that's really unhelpful, by the way, because there's no reason why it should go wrong any more than it should go right.
No, we should point out that if you are suffering, if you are in that abyss, you know, and there might be some people out there that are in a real bad shape, given what's gone on in, you know, stuff that went up and up and up for years on end, and suddenly lost everything rapidly. But we, as part of what we do, you know, if you are in a difficult place, then do seek help. You know, don't just let it carry on without, you know, any attention. Do speak to other people, and hence this importance of just trying to get into a social group. Don't forget your social groups. You know, your buddies that are bricklayers and whatever down the pub. Just go and have a chat with them about, you know, the further failures of Arsenal or Man U or whatever, and guess, you know, get into a different type of conversation, because the markets can absorb you into the, you know, the tragedy of all the emotions globally that go into what markets are in terms of the movement that are either on your side or not, you know, and they can have a traumatic effect on your core, you know. So leave you with a soundbite that if you are having difficulty, then do seek help, and don't just let it get you down, and just realise there are lots of other people in the same boat as you.
But that's why trading buddies are a great idea.
Well, precisely. And there are lots of things, you know, little things like Mendebel traders, those types of people that bring people together and you know, share stories. Really, really important. And I think we're trying to do that in, you know, bringing interesting guests to the table, and, you know, kind of, we had a Tom Canfield particularly, just, you know, so what did pain feel like? And of course it led to a heart attack, it led to all sorts of things, and a bit of a reset and a real big step back in terms of an approach. People need to hear more of those stories, the real life stories. It's not just about knowing about how someone, you know, bless his socks, Oliver making 1,000%. It's not just about that. There's the flip side of that. There's all sorts of other people going through difficult times, trying to work out their pathway to stay with the market journey and make money on this journey as effectively as they can, without totally disrupting their personal life. So I hope this chat with Steve has revealed perhaps a different side of Steve. This is about you finding out about the hosts, of course, and learning a bit about us in this sort of pub-like conversation, rather than sort of a, you know, perhaps a slightly prearranged type conversation with a guest, where we had to be very structured and, you know, very meaningful and called upon certain things. So I hope you enjoyed it all. No doubt you'll hear from us again, but you can look forward to the next podcast now. Any last words, Mr. Goldstein, from you?
No. Listen, I hope I haven't bored people to death here.
Oh, sure. I'll cut you off ages ago if it got boring.
And, you know, if you're trading, if you love trading, you know, stick at it, keep going. You know, but do reflect a lot, you know, look at yourself. You know, if you want to work with coaches, there's a lot of great coaches out there. It's, you know, if you're serious about this job, I'm just going to say it because I do sometimes avoid actually trying to sell coaching because I hate the idea of being seen to sell, which is a bit crazy.
Well, there's a lot of bad coaching out there, so we need to sell the good stuff.
Yeah, but, you know, coaching is not cheap. I will say that. You know, it's the same though if you go into sport. If you want to, you know, if you consider yourself decent tennis player, decent golfer, decent, you know, boxer, someone who's got a chance, you know, they work with coaches. You know, business people work with coaches. They hire coaches. And the idea is that it acts as a catalyst for them to get better, for them to fulfill their potential. You know, the potential is still within the person being coached, but the idea of the coach is to help them bring it out of them. And that's what happened to me. And I think that's what this call is really about.
Yeah.
Is sharing my story of how that helped me. It wasn't like a magic wand waved or anything like that. It doesn't work like that. And it doesn't work with anyone we coach like that. There's never a magic wand moment. But I know that it's had a huge impact, that our coaching, that our programs have had a huge impact on people. And I do say to people who ask me about coaching that look at it as an investment, not a cost.
Mm.
You know, look at it, what it might mean to you in terms of additional earned income over the next 5 to 10 years. You know, for me, it made a huge difference. And I think that's the best way to look at it.
Yes, you'll make errors that are far bigger than the cost of coaching.
Yeah, absolutely.
So absolutely. Put it in that perspective.
But you won't make errors. You won't just make errors. It's not. It wasn't even the reduction in the downside. It's the increase in the upside.
Yes.
That's what it is. You will make much more. You can't put a figure on it, but try and think about it for a second. And, you know, whether it's with me, whether it's with Mark, whether it's with one of the other many great coaches out there, you know, it is never a wasted investment. At the very minimum, you'll get your money back. It's a free option.
Et voila.
There you go.
Voila.
Thank
That's
you,
a note to end on.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure being a guest on my show.
Great. Well, listen, we'll leave it at that. And thank you all for your continued support in listening to our podcast. We get huge numbers listening nowadays. We're proud to be sponsored, of course, by TradeStation Global and the Society of Technical Analysts. Obviously, we carry on doing other sort of work with them as well. So we shall leave it at that and wish you well. Thanks for coming to the show.
Thank you for listening today. We would like to thank our podcast sponsorship partners, TradeStation Global and the Society of Technical Analysts, the STA. You can find out more about our sponsors at our website, alpha-mind.net, or see the link in the episode description. TradeStation Global is a multi-asset trading platform with access to international markets where you can trade a range of instruments from one single account and leverage professional-grade trading tools. Visit tradestation-international.com/alphamind to know more. The Society of Technical Analysts, the STA, provide well-beating technical analysis education programs. Alphamind podcast listeners can obtain a 10% discount off the cost of their excellent home study course. We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, we'd appreciate it if you could leave a friendly review or provide a rating for the show on whichever podcast service you use. You can find out more about us at our website, alpha-mind.net. You can follow us on Twitter at alphamind101 and at alphamind102. And you can connect with me, Stephen Goldstein, and my co-host, Mark Randall, on LinkedIn. You can also follow us and can check back over some of our past episodes on the alphamindpodcast.com. We wish you the best of luck in the markets. Have a good week.